Hello, and welcome to the Planential Podcast. My name is Barbara Ginty, and I am your host and also a CFP, which I'm sure you all know by now is a certified financial planner. And I am here tonight with my guest who has an awesome name. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Penny Pincher.
We've had some really fun names so far this season. We also had Summer Jones, which is the daughter of Dow Jones. And I feel like you got a good fake name as well. So we always start off by saying how old you are, how much you make in income, where you're located, city or rural area, and kind of what your general job title is.
Cool. Well, my name is Penny Pincher again. I am 31 years old. I live in an urban area in San Francisco, and I work as a software engineer. And my income is really interesting in that I have a lot of incentive-based income. So my annual salary or my annual take-home, my annual gross can be anywhere from $300,000 to $700,000.
So, whoa, that is a big swing.
Yeah, so last year there were a lot of positive events that happened that I was able to contribute to, and so as a result of that, my income was close to $700,000. But this year, I'm expecting my income to be closer to $300,000.
Okay, very nice. And that's just from your main job. Do you have a side hustle?
Who doesn't have a side hustle?
We have lots of side hustles.
Yeah, so I, there's so many, ways to kind of scratch your itches. And obviously as an engineer, that's one side of my brain. And then the other side of my brain is really focused on the arts. I did a lot of theater in high school and college and really enjoyed it and also love the physical arts. So 3 years ago, I started a small art company and we sell custom paintings.
Oh, that is so cool. So let's go over. So we normally also then go over. So your income is going to swing a little bit. So how do you do with budgeting?
So budgeting is, I feel pretty good about budgeting. So as my name suggests, I'm pretty frugal, live a pretty simple life.
So what, because San Fran's a pretty, like Manhattan, because we have a lot of guests from Manhattan, is a pretty expensive place. Do you rent or do you own?
So until last year, I had been renting. And then late last year, I purchased my first home in San Francisco.
Congratulations. That's a big deal.
Thank you. It's a little terrifying.
It's a big responsibility. It's like really adulting. It's a big responsibility.
Yeah. I've had a lot of friends say like, oh my gosh, you're really planting roots. I'm not from the West Coast. I'm from the South. And buying a place here was, both from an economic and personal finance perspective, a big move, but also emotionally kind of laying my roots in a city that's so far from my family was kind of a big deal for 2018.
I'm sure. And did you buy it on your own?
I bought it with my partner.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, great. And so that's usually the biggest part of someone's budget, right? Is the mortgage or rent? Is that the case or what is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I said I was really good at budgeting, but I actually don't know my numbers.
Oh, okay.
Very frugal. I think my monthly outgoing expenses are somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000 on a given month, and almost all of that is for the house at this point. Between both maintaining the house and paying down the mortgage.
The mortgage. And do you know about your mortgage? You know if you did a 15-year or 30-year?
And do you know? Yeah, we did a 7/1 adjustable rate mortgage. It's considered a 30-year mortgage, but the rate can adjust after the or on the 7th year.
Yep.
Okay,
and then do you know what it adjusts at?
Oh, Lord, it can go up to like some horrific number. I don't even want to think about it yet. So my plan, I think that what I've, read and what I understand from other people that do these types of mortgages is you plan to refinance in year 6.
Yeah.
Or sell. And so one of the things that kind of astounded me when I was looking for a home was kind of the numbers on how frequently, especially urban people, the numbers are really astounding on how often people buy and sell homes nowadays. I think when the 30-year mortgage was kind of invented, it was a time when people bought a house and that was the house for the rest of their lives. But urban people and kind of career-oriented people, I'm very open to moving to other cities. And so it's very possible that I would sell my house before that 7-year mark. And if I don't, then my plan would be to refinance.
Okay. Yeah. Cause just for the listeners at home. So the adjustable rates can be a little scary because you don't know what they're going to raise your interest rate on your mortgage in that 7th year. And so then your mortgage payment, most likely in the interest rate environment that we're in, it'll be higher. So your mortgage payment would go up.
So the nice thing though about those, not that I'm selling these, so I don't know why I'm advertising for it, but the nice thing about the adjustable rate mortgage is the rate that we got was lower. Really low.
Yep. So that's normally what they do. So they give you a lower rate and then they have the option to move it up in that 7th year in the reset. It's also really common because I have an adjustable rate mortgage because mine's a commercial mortgage. And so commercial mortgages are typically adjustable rates. And then usually as a first-time home buyer, as you were saying, if you're going to stay longer, it makes sense to do a 15-year or a 30-year. But since you know how it works, it's a totally a great option to get the lower interest rate. And then you know in that 6th year you need to reevaluate things. So it's a lot to learn, right? Did you find out about the closing costs? That was like something that I think shocks a lot of people.
So, okay. So you mostly talk to people from Manhattan. So closing costs in New York are insane. Closing costs in San Francisco are like a drop in the bucket. I think my total closing costs were like $6,000 or $7,000.
Wow. Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We should all be buying out there.
Yeah. I've heard the horror stories. So the size of, home purchase that we were looking at, you start looking at percents and you're like, God, that percent seems so small, but when you multiply it by this number, it suddenly becomes massive. So we were really nervous about closing costs, but it ended up being about $6,000.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. And then now you're going to be building equity in the city that you're living in, which is fantastic.
Very excited about that. And actually, the home that I purchased is a 2-unit building. So we live in one of the 2 units. It's flat style, and flat just means like the entire floor of the building. So we live in the lower flat and we have tenants that we've moved into the upper flat.
That's right. So you have 2 side hustles.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Landlording is, there's a lot of tools nowadays that make landlording a lot more approachable. But also it's really approachable because the people that are our tenants know that this is our home and are very respectful of the property. And we're right here, so if they ever need us, we're not so far away that we ever feel helpless in terms of helping them with repairs or communicating with them.
That's fantastic. Oh, so that's great. That's fantastic, because then that'll help cover the cost of the mortgage and everything and offset hopefully some of the cost.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. We were looking at single-family homes, which obviously would be, most people's primary or like preferred choice. But for us, single family homes are, in San Francisco at least, such a premium because people that don't want the side hustle of being a landlord are willing to pay a premium to just own their property, own the land, and be done with it. And so we were able to.
So it was more affordable to go, or more economical to go to the 2-family for that area.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic if you're willing to do the extra work. Because as you said, there's definitely a lot of technology that makes it easier. And the fact that you're living there makes it a little bit easy from a logistics standpoint, right? So you can let someone in. You don't have to hire someone to be there if there's going to be a repair or something. And then it helps offset some of the cost.
Yeah, it actually helps offset a lot of the cost. Rents in San Francisco, just like property values, are high. And so our tenants are helping us pay about half of our mortgage.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's a real side hustle.
Well, I actually would say it's a lot less work than the
primary than the other business hustle. Than the other side hustle.
Yeah,
it's funny how sometimes that happens, right?
Like, this is bringing in so much more value, and yet I think people that do side hustles, there's a lot of reason that people pursue side hustles. For me, I just had to scratch this itch. The arts are so important in my life and so important to me that it was really important to start this. And also the company that we started with art is a social enterprise. So it also scratches my like karmic itch as well. And reminds me of the value of giving back.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you're able to do all of it. God, you're busy with everything. So you have a mortgage, which is a very good type of debt, and you have your interest rate and you understand that it's resetting, which is fantastic. And then do you have any other debt? Do you have school loans or anything like that?
Very luckily, neither me nor my partner has any school debt.
That is fantastic because it is awful, absolutely awful. So then how are we doing? How are you doing on saving?
I think I'm doing well.
Good. Tell me a little bit about that. Are you saving primarily through work? Are you in, you, do you have a 401k through your employer?
Yes, I have a 401k through my employer, and I've
And do you have like an employee stock purchase plan or stock options or anything like that?
yes, and that's actually where the variable part of my compensation comes in.
Okay.
So I'm given at no cost to me stock options and those or stock units, they're called restricted stock
Restricted
units.
stock, yeah.
So those will obviously increase in value as the value of the company increases. And if there's material events that are happening, then that can increase, pretty sharply, or decrease, right? There's the risk
Yep,
as
that
well.
it goes down as
Uncertainty.
well.
Right, exactly. So I have been saving in my 401k since my very first job right out of college, and I've kept rolling it into my current 401k.
That's when, how old were you when you got your first job with a 401k?
I think I was 22 when I graduated from college. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so you've been saving this entire time.
Been saving the whole time.
Ah,
And
I love it. We should have called you Penny the Saver.
well, I pinch and save. Yeah, I try to be frugal and in every way, kind of think about the future. And I know it's from a privileged position that I'm able to save that much. But I also tell people, the quicker you can hide your money from yourself by
Yes.
putting it into a tax-protected asset, the better you're able to kind of lower your standard of living such that you're living beneath your means, and then you're able to save. So I
It's
as you
100% because I talk to people, and the statistic is I think it's 70% of people live paycheck to paycheck. And what we often find on the podcast with the guest is that we can find the money in the budget. And another issue that we see is that when you get people get a raise, is they increase their standard of living
Yeah.
right out of the gate. And so then so you're never really getting ahead because you're never increasing your savings ratio.
I think it would be interesting to look at my spending habits over the last few years, because I do think the fact that my compensation is somewhat variable, at least intrinsically or subconsciously, forces me to think about living at the, in my worst case scenario.
Well, as I was going to say, because it swings so high, in your mind, you're coming from a standpoint, are you planning on, okay, I'm going to make 300, and then if you make 700, great, I'm going to save it?
Yes.
That's fantastic. So tell me, how much you have right now in your 401k? Where was it when you last looked at it?
401k. I pulled up my personal capital account so that this would
Perfect.
be an easy chat. I hope they're sponsoring your podcast. And if they aren't, you should just use that snippet because.
Maybe we'll ask them if they want to sponsor.
Oh gosh, I can't tell which one's which. 401k. Oh, 401k, 122.
Perfect. Okay. 122,000, yeah?
Yep, 122,000. And I have, so my previous 401ks, I have in a traditional IRA.
Okay, so every time you left, you just rolled it into the traditional.
Yeah, I never rolled it into the new 401k. I don't really know why, but it ended up being actually a bad tax strategy because then I wasn't able to do any backdoor.
Yeah, I was just about to say that we had talked about that on one of our other podcasts, but because of that, you fall into the pro rata rule.
Yep. So I
Yep.
have so that no one told me that.
You should have come on the podcast sooner. No, I'm just
I know, Barb. I should have found you sooner in my life. I actually have learned my lesson from that mistake, but there's no way to like
Yeah, there's
reverse
no,
it. Once you have a
unfortunately, yeah.
traditional IRA, you're done.
So the
So
only
is
thing is, in retirement though, you can do it in the future in retirement. You can do Roth conversions. It's not backdoor Roth. It's a little different, but you'll be able to do it in the future.
Nice,
Because you'll
very
aggregate you'd roll your 401k out, so you just have one IRA, and then you'll have nothing in a Roth. And then at that point, then you can do the Roth conversions in retirement. Because it'll work better that way.
well. I also have a Roth now. So in the
Oh.
traditional IRA, I've got about 90,000, and then I have a Roth that has 110,000.
How did you get into the Roth with 110?
I started putting money into my Roth IRA when I was 16 years old. And I was working my first job at Target.
You are like our poster child here, Penny Pincher.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, there's, positives and negatives. That means I didn't have access to any of that capital when I was completely broke in college, so I ate a lot of ramen noodles.
Yeah, but you survived, right?
I survived.
You're still here.
Yeah, I was really lucky in that I had an economics teacher in high school, and I came from a family that didn't have a lot of kind of sophistication around finances. And so I asked my teacher, what should I do? I work at Target. I have $3,000 in a bank account. What do I do with
it? So you asked your teacher and not your parents?
I asked my teacher. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, because we talk a little bit on the podcast about how a lot of your habits are formed at home when you're growing up. So that's interesting. So you decided to ask, it was a her?
It was a he.
It was a he. Okay, you decided to ask him. And he told you to do a Roth?
He told me to put it into a Roth IRA.
No way.
He did.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so I put it into a Roth IRA.
How did you figure that out in high school? What did you do? Because that's like pre-Google, right? Because you're like an older millennial.
I am an elder millennial. That's correct. And this was not pre-Google, though. Google existed. I also asked him, I was like, well, how do you put it into a Roth IRA? And he, you know what? That's actually a really interesting question about Googling things. I don't know.
I thought it was pre-Google because I don't remember having a computer in my house. Oh, maybe I think we had AOL dial, but I don't remember being able to Google it. But maybe I was able to Google back in high school.
I think you were. Because this.
Oh, but I'm older. I'm older. So
when you were saying,
yeah, I'm like the eldest millennial out there, so like super senior. So I actually was in college when you were in high school.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, there was no Google.
Have access. I do think he, so my teacher told me some options, and I think he recommended Vanguard. Again, try to get them to sponsor the podcast. And he got me into Vanguard. So I have like this ancient Vanguard Roth IRA product that like every time I call to get support, they're like, how do you have this? I'm like, I don't know.
When I was 16.
Is it that one? Like, how do I get a better
Was it your Roth math IRA? Teacher? What teacher was it?
It was my economics teacher.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That was like $100,000.
Yeah. I mean, at the time it was $3,000.
But now you have a
2008 financial crisis. It was like a dollar.
But and you kept it in. That was interesting. So, do you knew to keep it in?
I knew if you touch it, things get bad. So I just
Not a lot of people know that. A lot of people think what I hear all the time, which is like the famous saying, is I'm going to take it out and I'll put it back in when it gets better. I'm like, can you call me when it gets better?
Yeah, no, I didn't take it out. But I will tell you, I would still consider myself a pretty unsophisticated investor. Mm-hmm. But I did get a little bit panicked. At the time of the market crash, I had saved $12,000. So I had $12,000 in my account when it crashed. And it went down to like, I'm going to say less than $6,000. And I sold within the account and reinvested into other mutual funds in the same account. So it did rebound eventually. I didn't put it into cash, but I did for some reason think it would be a great idea to
to rebalance it.
Classes. Like the entire economy across the world was down and I was like, this is my moment. I'm going to go,
I'm going to switch it up. Hey, yeah. Well, you stayed in and that's more than most people, to be honest. So that's fantastic. Okay. So I do still think you can probably do the Roth conversions when you get to retirement because you only have IRA and Roth. It's the issue you kind of run into is if you have the non-deductible asset, and that's how you do those mega backdoor Roths.
And the 401k is a non-deductible asset?
Well, so typically when you're going to be doing the backdoor Roth, you're going to be moving money into your 401k after your pre-tax contribution is a non-deductible. And then from there, converting. And because you're moving from non-deductible to the conversion, that's when you run into the pro rata rule. So that's the non-deductible dollar that kind of throws things awry. And also, I think also tripping it up is that you have a 401k. I'd have to look up the rules for the pro rata, how you fall into pro rata, but I think it's the non-deductible dollar and then having a workplace plan. Are there two issues?
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize the workplace plan had anything to do with it. So that's, of course, very interesting and very tax advantage to put it in the Roth.
Yeah, so you can definitely, I'm almost positive you can do Roth conversions down the road once you're done working when you retire. So I can find that out for you. I can get you some more info on the pro rata rule, but the pro rata rule is what trips up a lot of people to try and do the mega backdoor Roth.
And the mega backdoor is the one where you put it into a regular IRA and then convert it into a Roth.
No, that's your traditional Roth conversion. The mega one is when you're using, so a 401k is a defined benefit plan in the IRC code. And so the limitation on the number of dollars that can be put into a defined benefit plan for 2019 is 56,000 total. And that includes the employee and the employer dollars total. But your limit for taking a tax deduction on it for 2019 is going to be, God, I'm blanking on the number, 19,000. And then whatever your company matches. So let's just say your company match brings you up to 26,000, right? They throw you 7,000 for the company match. So then you have another $30,000 that you can put into the 401k before you reach the defined benefit contribution, the total limit for that type of plan. And so those dollars can typically, not all plans allow it, it depends on the plan document. Usually with companies that have high income earners, they allow for it in the plan because it's an alternative saving mechanism. So then you dump in 30,000 as a non-deductible contribution, meaning it goes in after tax, but it's not a Roth. It's non-deductible. It's similar to doing a non-deductible IRA. And so then once those non-deductible dollars are in there, that 30,000, let's just say you do it in one shot just for simplicity purposes, you can then do a conversion, an in-plan conversion on those dollars and move it into a Roth inside of the 401k.
So I actually do that now.
You're doing that now?
I do that now.
How are you not running into the pro rata rule? Are you
So
immediately converting it when you get it in?
I am in, so it, so what I do is I contribute to both the pre-tax and after-tax section of my 401k, and every year I target to hit the max number that you just mentioned.
The 56, you're doing 56,000 total. And
Yes.
are you maxing out the 19,000 is all pre-tax?
Yes.
Okay, and then the next amount is going in as non-deductible.
Correct.
And then when are you doing the conversion?
So as soon as it gets into my 401k, then I do it's funny that you mentioned the backdoor because the mega backdoor. I think there's a mega backdoor for certain benefit plans that allows me to immediately convert it. Convert it in and put it into my Roth IRA.
And everything's held at the same account, correct? So your Roth, you do you have a separate Roth, the Vanguard Roth that we were referencing, that's 100,000. You also have Roth monies inside of your 401k.
I don't have Roth monies inside of my 401k.
So when you're immediate, are you immediately rolling it out of your 401k plan into your Vanguard Roth?
Yes. It's actually considered a withdrawal.
Yeah. Why aren't you doing it just inside of the plan and keeping it all in the 401k?
I don't know that I have an answer to that except that I already had a Roth IRA account, and so it only allowed me to roll it into that Roth IRA account. Again, my dinosaur account that I'm stuck with for life.
Okay, so then, so you do the non-deductible into your defined benefit plan and then roll it out rather than doing a non-deductible IRA.
I think so. I don't know what non-deductible means, but I'm
Okay,
rolling it.
so non-deductible, it's a great, sorry, that's a great question. Non-deductible means that you're not taking a tax break on it. So your traditional money going into a 401k is a reduction dollar for dollar, right, with your income. Non-deductible means it goes in after tax, but it's not a Roth dollar. So that the origin, the if let's just say you put $1,000 in non-deductible, it goes into the account. You're not going to be taxed again on that $1,000, but the growth on that $1,000. So if it turns into two, you pay taxes on the gain of $1,000.
Yes, exactly. So those, I call them after tax, non-deductible dollars are put into my after tax 401k, immediately withdrawn and put into my Roth IRA, where they have had no growth. So there's no taxable event.
Right, because it stays in a money market or cash account before you convert it.
Correct.
Perfect. And you're not running into the pro rata rule?
No.
Because you have no other non-deductible dollars, because you're
Correct.
immediately converting them.
Correct.
Okay.
I actually don't. So this is actually a point of great interest for me in terms of kind of loopholes and economic
Yeah.
accessibility for people. I find it really interesting that the benefit plan that I am able to participate in allows me to do this, but not all benefit plans, not all 401ks are set up this way.
Yeah, no, because so the issue is, and it's interesting because I have met several advisors that have never even heard of this, and I
Yes.
know about it from working at an investment bank. Really, I didn't learn, I didn't learn about it doing the CFP, to be honest. I learned about it working in an investment bank with a highly comped individuals, and they have it in the benefit plan, right? They have it. They have the plan document in the 401k to allow for it. It's allowed in the IRC, like code, which is the IRS code, right? But the plans don't have to allow for it. And a lot of them don't, even when they have highly comp people. Like, I've dealt with doctors who aren't able to do it.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Barb. And it's a really interesting thing, but like, some people have access to it and some people don't. I'm personally very interested in access. And
yeah, and I think that it's in the code for a reason. And you know what I think the worst part about it is when you call the 1-800 number to talk to, like, when I call and do a conference call about someone's work plan to see if they have availability to do it, because I know it's legal, right? I know the IRS allows it for the overarching plan structure, not per company,
right?
Is that the people on the 1-800 number have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, can we also talk about the fact that there's no, like, word for it? So I can't just call it a something, because there's already a mega backdoor. So it's like a super mega secret handshake backdoor.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad that we brought that up, because there is really no word for it. Like, it's not a Roth conversion. A traditional Roth conversion is you go from IRA monies to a Roth IRA, right? Traditional IRA to Roth IRA. That's a typical Roth conversion. Has to be done by December 31st, and they've changed the rules on that a little bit. Yeah, this is a workplace plan taking advantage of the maximum amount of dollars allowed in a defined benefit plan and using that to your advantage to basically, because of our ages, front load a Roth, because your regular Roth you wouldn't be eligible to do because of your income. And if you were eligible to do a regular Roth and go in the front door, right, it would be, I think it's $6,000 for 2019. And this way you can put, just using the example I used earlier, you could put $30,000 in it.
Right.
Which is incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah. And I love the Roth conversion. I did it for my sister, and we moved when she was in law school, the poor girl, I had her almost maxing out. I had her putting a lot of money away given her income when she was working at her last job. So she ended up with $60,000 saved when she went to law school. So I converted the entire amount over, $20,000 a year, and she paid nothing in tax. So she paid nothing going into the plan because it went in pre-tax, right? And she paid nothing on the conversion because she had no income. But that's a standard Roth conversion. But this is different. And it depends on who you talk to. It's given, I've been told it's a mega backdoor Roth, but there's all different fancy handshakes and slang for it. But it's a really interesting concept. But I agree with you. It's not, I think that everyone with a 401k should have access to it. But I think it has to do with the plan document and also who they're using as the company that's administrating the 401k, right? They have to be able to understand the complexity of this.
It must be that there's a lot of like complexity, extra paperwork.
There's a ton of, I'm sure there's a, our industry has so much paperwork. It's unbelievable. So I'm sure the paperwork around it isn't worth it for certain companies to, because 401ks are expensive as a cost to the company. You know, it's good offering it as a benefit retention, but it is a cost. And I'm sure every time you add one of these bells and whistles into your plan, it costs more.
Agreed. And I mean, they have a special phone line. It's definitely extra. But when I first found out that I had access to this, I almost didn't believe it. And
you're like, this sounds too good to be true.
And also, like, the first thought I had was that how unfair is this, that like the mega wealthy have access to this benefit.
Yeah. I mean, I must say it's true. The plans that allow for it really have a very highly comped employee base, because it's not worth, you know, if your income is $40,000, you're not going to be throwing 30 into the 401k non-deductible side, right?
Exactly.
So it tends to be for a much larger institution that has a very highly comped workforce, or at least enough of those highly comped where they want to have this as an incentive, as another way to save for retirement. So you get the restricts, you have a really very sophisticated 401k plan, and you're taking full advantage of it, which is awesome. What about any other, do you have any other deferred compensation programs at work?
We do have the capability to do deferred compensation.
And using a rabbi trust?
I have no idea.
Okay.
For me, it's like super science. I have no idea what that is.
Okay. So a rabbi trust, so typically when there's highly comped, another option besides stock options and the non-deductible contribution and then the immediate Roth conversion option, is additional deferred comp can sometimes, not always, but be a rabbi trust, which is essentially where they let you defer more compensation into another vehicle. And it's a very complex topic, so I'm just going to keep it high level. But essentially, it's held in trust for you, and depending on how you choose to, and you have to make the election, some companies a year in, I think usually a year in advance for the next year. And then you have to choose when you make that election how you want it paid out, like in 5 years or in retirement. And there's a lot of rules around surrounding how it's going to be, how it will function. It's all invested. But the downside of those are usually it's an asset of the company.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's something to consider. I don't always, I mean, sometimes I recommend them, sometimes I don't. But it's something to really think about, because if it's a, if you're getting deferred compensation in another option as the form of a, it's, I think it's traditionally called a rabbi trust. The thing to be careful with is it is an asset of the company. So if there was an issue with the company, they can use those monies.
Wow.
So yeah, you can look into that and let me know what it is, if there's another option for
you. Hours, you have to make the election kind of during open enrollment. So at the end of the year, kind of predicting for the following year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not that, it's not a very flexible option. It's not like the 401k where you can call up and say, I want to reduce my contribution.
Right.
Yeah, you have to make the election the year earlier, and then you have to choose how you want it paid out and when. But it's worth looking into, because if you think you're going to have a big year, it helps you, just like in the name, it helps you defer more of your compensation, right? Like another saving mechanism for you.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into that. That's really helpful.
And very out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, definitely hide your money so far that
you're so far that you never know you have it.
For 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do believe in the out of sight, out of mind. It really makes it much easier because you're not tempted to spend it.
Agreed.
Okay, so we've covered your 401k. You have restricted stock options. You're going to look into see if you have what kind of deferred compensation you have, and we can take that offline and figure that out. Because as you said, it wouldn't be until the end of the year when they open up that window to elect for it. What else is going on in your life in terms of your personal finance?
I can't think of anything really. A little uneventful, other than buying the house.
Yeah, well, that's a big thing, and that's another way to increase your net worth, right? Because did you do 20% down?
We did 20% down.
Fantastic. Can I ask what the value was?
The 20% or the full amount?
The full amount.
So we purchased the house for $2.185 million.
So yeah, you're building your net worth. This is fantastic. And then what is your plan? I'm just interested. What is your plan depending on how this year goes in terms of your income? Because you're already set up to do the 401k, right? So you're already going to be maxing out that defined benefit limit, right?
Right.
And so let's just say you have a good, do you get paid out quarterly on the bonus structure, or?
My bonus is just once a year.
Okay.
So that happens in the first quarter of the year. And it's pretty much always the same amount. My incentive compensation is mostly coming from my stock units that can flex.
Can up flex. And down. Okay, so you're.
I don't have a specific plan.
And then, because I would say, so besides your 401k and your traditional IRA and your Roth, do you have an emergency fund?
I do. Well, I also have a couple of brokerage.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask about.
Accounts. Yeah, I have a couple of brokerage accounts. I think that in total, they add up to a little bit less than $300,000. Okay. And then I kind of have like a. Access to money that I have at all times. And actually I kind of play it a little fast and loose when it comes to access to capital, because I feel that I'm pretty young. Generally speaking, when the market is doing well, I don't keep a lot in cash. But I've been feeling a bit nervous about the market for the last 8 months or so. So I have about $50,000 to $80,000 just in cash in an account. And that would cover, as I mentioned earlier, my expenses are like $5,000 to $6,000 a month.
Yep.
So cover more than 6 months worth of expenses.
I think that's fantastic. And I know everyone always hates the fact that emergency fund makes no money. But if there was, God forbid, an emergency, and now as a homeowner, there could be a major expense that it comes up. So I really like the idea of having cash always.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that that is one thing that really shifted with purchasing my home. I immediately put $50,000 into an account and was like, this money will never make any money for me, but it will always give me peace of mind.
Always give you peace of mind and prevent a future problem, right? It'll prevent you having to sell from your brokerage account in a down market because something happened with the house, like the water heater or the roof or something major, you know?
Yes.
Houses are expensive.
Really expensive. Money pits.
Like they really, yes. My property this summer, it was like the ceiling, there was a leak, and then the ceiling, I didn't catch the leak, so then the ceiling kind of caved in, and then the water heater went. And then the gutters had to be redone besides the roof. And then there was a pipe. It was just like everything happened in like a 3 week period.
I know, and you can't really like even the best accountant, I think, would struggle to keep track of all of the little like nicks and bruises of owning a home. So you just have to hope that the value of the home increases to like
100%.
cover the
Yeah.
roof.
And
Yes.
electricians and plumbers are expensive.
Well, they're especially expensive, I would say, in San Francisco, where we have a declining middle class, but that's more of a socioeconomic topic.
Yes. And they're more expensive when you call for an emergency.
They're very expensive when you're crying, I've heard.
Yeah, the price goes up. If it's like Saturday night, it's more expensive. Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like I like everything you're doing. The one thing I wanna you're not running into the pro rata rule, which is good. And I'm just wondering what your savings ratio is, because I think with your income, what you're doing a good job is the key for you is just going to be tax efficiency and taking advantage of all the different saving strategies that you get through work. That'll be your best option, obviously, right? And then just continue to keep saving.
Yeah, I think that really last year, which was the highest earning year I've ever had, and as I mentioned, I don't expect this year to be a particularly high earning year, was really when, and also with the new tax law in effect, I really felt walloped. I was really shocked to kind of do the numbers and realize what my tax burden was going to be for 2018, and
And
so.
did you file single? Are you filing
I
single?
file single. Yes,
Okay.
I'm unmarried. File single and no dependents.
Okay. Yeah, it's gonna be a
Except my
big,
cat.
except your cat.
Doesn't count.
It's gonna be a big tax year.
Yeah, so this was actually the first year that I've had to prepay my taxes. And it was really surprising. And I think for me, I always thought about people that made, $700,000 a year, and kind of thought of like, oh, well, they're just so wealthy that like they don't even think about the tax burden. But the reality is, like, I'm pretty young, and this is one of the first years that I've had this type of income, and I was really surprised by.
Can I ask what you were doing estimated? So they put you on it for the whole year for all of 18?
Yes. So my by mid-year, it was clear
Okay.
that I was going to be in a position where I would be paying penalties if I didn't prepay.
And just so for our listeners know, what happens is if they anticipate that the government doesn't mind, the IRS doesn't mind if they owe you money, but they do not like if you owe them money. And if they anticipate that you're going to owe them a lot of money and you're not going to be, they don't want to wait for it. So if they, did your HR let you know or your accountant?
I have a person that does my taxes, and I call him a tax advisor, but mostly he just tells me I owe money.
Yeah. And this is what your check is good. You're going to write the check
And this
for.
is how, yeah, start saving now.
Yeah. So yeah, I know the government does not like to wait for their tax dollars. So they put you on, he put you on with starting in September for your quarterly, or yours wasn't quarterly, but you started paying then.
He just made me prepay half of what he estimated I would owe in April.
Okay. And so what do you think you're going to owe on having a $700,000 a year?
Oh, I don't even. The total number is obviously for me at least, as someone who's more of a penny pincher, who worked three jobs to put myself through college, it's shocking to look at the number, but it's also shocking to look at.
The other number. No, but I think it's good to, I think it's good to, for people to hear because I agree with you. I think the concept is if you make 700,000, like you have so much money, you don't have to worry about it, but it's a big number for the tax bill.
And especially when you're kind of coming from a place where just a few years ago,
You didn't
I
have
mean,
it. Yeah.
less than $100,000 a year. And so for me, and also kind of coming from a background where I didn't have a lot of economic financial sophistication, every now and then I feel quite lonely thinking about how to deal with the great fortune that I've had.
Yeah, because you can't, and that's why I love the podcast because you can't talk about it.
Yeah, a lot, especially, oh man, especially women. I coach my employees all the time to be open with me about how important finances and their compensation is to them, because I find that with my male employees. They're happy to tell me that they demand a $10,000 pay rate
Yeah.
increase. But my ladies, you know, they kind of stare at the floor and, you know, twiddle with their fingers, and I can tell they're agitated, but I can't tell what, you know, is it the fight, you know, what is motivating them? What do they need? What do they want? But I find that, like, man, it would be nice if someone would coach me the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, because I think it's important, because as you said, a lot of the women that we've had on, the women that we've had on the show that have had really banner years that have gotten themselves a really awesome compensation started at the bottom and started not making that amount of money. And it's a shame that you can, I mean, it's a hard thing to do to go from, you know, to quadruple your salary or even more than that, and to not be able to kind of celebrate it and talk about it, I think is a bit of a shame.
Well, and then also in the middle of trying to celebrate it, I'm, you know, thinking about selling a kidney or two to pay my tax bill for this last year.
Yeah, so can you tell me what the number was? Is it 300 something? Do you remember?
I don't know. So I don't know the total number, because a lot of that is withheld in
In your pay. Yeah.
right. But my total number that I'm going to owe out of pocket is going to be about $50,000.
Yep, that sounds about right. So the good thing is the company, considering what your salary, what your total comp is, I don't think it's gonna make you feel any better, but considering what your total comp is, that's not a terrible out of pocket.
I agree, but actually, one of the things that I do in my, I think it's W3, W2, W something, I basically, if they have an option to, like,
Do an extra withholding.
claim negative one, I claim negative one. I'm like, there is no person here. There's no dependent. There's no me. I don't exist. Like, charge me all the taxes, because I would significantly prefer, at least in my current position, that my company withhold as much as
Yeah,
possible.
absolutely. Because no one likes writing a check, right, for that amount
No
to the
one's paying.
IRS.
Yeah. I will say, I don't mind if the government owes me a little bit of money, but it is not fun when you owe the government.
No, I don't mind. I actually agree with you. I don't mind if they want to send me like $1,500, 2,000. It's like found money, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind until they send it to me and then I hide it somewhere.
Yes.
But no, nobody likes getting a call from the accountant and being like, congratulations, you really hit it out of the ballpark last year. You did an awesome job at work. You need to write a check for 50,000 to the government.
I need you to be my tax person. My tax person never tells me, congratulations, you're doing really well, and that's why you have to pay all of this
Oh,
money.
that they should. I feel like they should lead with that, right? Like you kicked ass last year. You hit your highest numbers ever. So the government just wants to be your partner there. They want their peace.
Want to enjoy, yeah.
They want to enjoy with you. Very, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think this was a really great session. So I will do a little digging for you. When we find out about your deferred comp, and I can take a look at that for you.
Awesome, will do.
And then we'll figure it out from there. But you're on the right track and you're doing a great job. And tell your accountant next time to give you some kudos first.
Absolutely.
All
Thanks so
right.
much for that.
So we'll for our listeners out there, thank you for listening. And if you want to check out our classes, you can find them at www.planential.com. And that's it for tonight.